movies, take a few notes.
It was fun.
What's up, Goreheads, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Extreme Horror Replay Podcast. And I have a guest on the phone with me since Nancy is unavailable. Again, she is booked with school, very much in the thick of it. All the way from the great, probably very humid state of Florida, I have Nate Hensley. Nate, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am good. Now, you run a podcast. I've listened to your podcast pretty extensively, but you have your own podcast. What is your podcast, sir?
My podcast is called A Scary Home Companion, and it is a horror storytelling podcast, all original stories, and got some original music in there, too. That's all from other people. I just do the stories.
Gordo the Clown.
To break up my monologues a little bit.
Right. I would have to say that your podcast is very, I would say, anthology. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a sneaky anthology, though. It seems like an anthology at first, and then things start to accumulate, and characters will start to recur, and eventually threads will start to come together.
And that was actually one of the first things I noticed when I started listening, because I just happened upon your podcast, actually. I can't say I was searching it out, but I happened upon your podcast. And I started listening, and it was just one of those situations where, like, I would listen to the first, I don't know, six or so episodes, and it was like, well, where the fuck is this leading, you know? And then, and suddenly it was like, oh, shit, this is all coming together, and character from episode one was in episode six, but he or she was not in episode two through four, and it was very interesting. I mean, I can only imagine the amount of time it would take for you to put these stories together in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, organizing everything is tough. I do seasons. I'm just wrapping up season five, and a season is about 12 episodes.
Right.
And I do it that way so that I can take a chunk of 10 or 12 episodes and work on them all sort of concurrently so that hopefully they work together in some way, or at least go in some sort of order, you
right.
know?
So I thoroughly enjoy them. So, yeah, I'm going to, you know, if y'all are a fan of scary movies and scary stories, definitely go check this out. A Scary Home Companion. And you're found on all the major podcatchers, I assume, right?
Everywhere. And you and Nancy are in the next episode, which is being released a couple of days from now. By the time you release this, it'll be out already.
Yes.
But Ghosts of the Devil's Triangle, and you guys are great in it.
Oh, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I'm trying to get her to come back into it, but she's... Like I said, she's really in the thick of doing her research right now, so it's hard to get her to break away. But yeah, okay, so with that great introduction thus far, you obviously, being a horror writer, are a horror fan, so what got you into horror?
Knowing I was coming on the show, I thought about this, and what got me into horror really was what I consider now to be one of the worst horror novels I've ever read. I'm a little kid. I'm waiting in line at the grocery store with my grandma in Illinois over summer break. The movie Cujo has just been released.
Right.
So they've re-released the novel Cujo with like this amazing cover with the word Cujo written in blood on a white picket fence.
I remember
and
that.
I talked her into buying it for me, and I devoured this book in like 2 days. Learned all sorts of cuss words. Learned all sorts of stuff about sex. It was, now, as a grown-up, I don't think it's a very good book, but it blew my mind, got me hooked on Stephen King
right.
and horror in general.
Yeah, that's cool. And then, had you seen the movie up until that point, or?
No, and I wouldn't see it for several years after that point.
Okay. Just for fear, because you knew what was coming.
Well, was actually young enough and not cool enough to have anybody to take me to see an R-rated movie at that point. I was an older kid, but I was still a kid.
Right. How about as far as movies? Any movies that really tipped your interest into the genre?
The original Texas Chainsaw Massacre is still one of my all-time favorites.
All right. I will accept that answer.
But I was also, that got me at an early, you know, like in my high school years, I was super into like low budget and indie horror. And I dug through, you know, I watched all the slashers at the time, but I was very much into movies like the original Evil Dead, you know. I went and saw Evil Dead 2 on opening weekend because I'd been a huge fan of my bootleg copy of the original Evil Dead for a couple of years, you know?
Right. I was not fortunate enough to see that one in the theaters. I caught that one on VHS. I remember babysitting my younger sister, and it was one of the few occasions that my parents actually let me rent a horror movie, and for some reason, that is what I picked. When they actually came home from whatever they were doing, the movie was still on, and it was the scene where the witch, I guess, the deadite, I'm sorry, she's flying around the room saying, "I'll swallow your soul, I'll swallow your soul." And then one of the eyeballs gets popped out, and she ends up swallowing it, or he swallows something. So
no, it goes right into that lady's mouth. Yeah. I remember.
So they were weary of, or leery rather, of letting me rent horror movies from that point on. But you know, still worthy of praise. Well, the movie, we will dig into this one now that you and I picked, and we discussed it a little bit back and forth, but the movie that we are going to be covering today is actually Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Now, when we were talking, you said you hadn't seen this in quite a while, and actually the same thing for me. I remember seeing this movie. Now, this movie came out technically in 1986. However, it was not actually released onto home video until probably 1992. And I remember seeing this in high school. It was either my junior or senior year, so 95 or 96, or right there around that time frame. But see, I had remember seeing this photos of this movie in an old buddy's Fangoria magazines. And the one that really stood out was, spoiler alert, was the one, the prostitute or the hooker, whoever it was, dead on the toilet with the bottle in her face. So you said you hadn't seen this in forever. When was your first experience with this?
Just like with Texas Chainsaw and Evil Dead, this was a movie right in line with those two. Like, low budget, indie, really intense horror. So I watched it a bunch of times where you said 92, so that I definitely wasn't an insider. I saw it when it came out. I probably haven't seen it in, at the bare minimum, a decade.
Yeah.
And I just watched it last night. It's available. The remastered version is available on Amazon Prime.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, if you've got Prime, you can go there and watch it now.
Yeah.
Free, and you totally should.
Well, and this is one of those movies, you know what? I was actually talking to Richard from the Radio Nasties podcast. And now, granted, he's 5,000 miles away in the UK, but he said he does not have it on his Amazon Prime, so... And he's never seen this movie, which is depressing, so...
It is. But, I mean, that's a great word, because this is a really depressing
movie. Oh, yes. It's grim, it's violent,
I would describe it as nihilistic, above all else, you know?
Fair assessment. All right, so, yes, depressing, nihilistic, grim, gritty, all these words could best describe this movie. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Otis? Plug it in.
Did you really kill your mama?
What?
Did you really kill your mama?
I guess I did.
She must have treated you real bad.
She was a whore.
Susie! Susie!
you dance naked?
Sure, all the time around the house.
Otis.
Best little naked dancer you ever saw.
You never.
You telling me you never killed anybody before?
I ain't saying that.
Open your eyes, Otis. Look at the world. It's either you or them. You know what I mean. Don't do that, Otis. She's your sister.
I feel like I know you. Like I've known you for a long time. I feel like I've known you forever and ever.
It's like the blood droppings from a deer you've shot. And all they gotta do is follow those droppings, and pretty soon they're gonna find that deer.
I ain't interrupting this, man.
What are you doing?
I don't want to see it again.
Originally released in 1986, directed by John McNaughton, and has a 7.0 on IMDb, which for a movie as controversial and as, you know, gritty and nihilistic.
Surprisingly high, yeah.
Yeah.
Deserved, personally deserved of an even higher rating, but that's IMDb.
For, yeah, you know? Well, there's a lot of people out there that aren't used to this kind of grit and realism. So the movie stars Michael Rooker as Henry, Tracy Arnold as Becky, and Tom Tolles as Otis. So now we're going to dig into the plot, and you feel free to jump in whenever you want. You're basically going to run the color commentary. And,
okay.
So you're going to play Nancy's role, essentially.
All right.
So, all right, here we go. So, we start off, there's a dead body woman, and she's in a grass or field or something, just dead, nude, of course, and Henry in a diner. And now, I guess the first thing you kind of realize is that, not yet, because literally we're only 2 minutes into the movie, but it's kind of a way of, like, showing that he did it without saying he did it. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it comes across that way, but now and as soon as Henry leaves the diner, now we got two bodies in a grocery store or a convenience store, whatever it is. They're dead, slumped over the counter. You can see, obviously they've been shot, and you can kind of hear in the background, I guess would it be considered a voiceover? I don't know, but it's the audio of the attack, and you hear gunshots. Cut to a bloody sheet on a bed, which I have to assume is probably in a hotel. And this is when it pans over to the hooker sitting on the toilet. And she is obviously dead, and she's got a broken Coke bottle or a broken beer bottle or something.
Tied up and mostly naked.
Yeah.
And a stunning visual. And this movie gets by a lot on implying more than it shows.
It
but
does.
When it does show, like this bottle in the face, it's jarring.
Right. And that is the picture that I remember seeing in the Fangoria magazine that initially drew me to this movie. Now, and this was, you know, I was 13, 14 years old. I don't even remember. That was the picture, was the dead hooker with the bottle in her face that was like, oh, yeah. Shit, you know, this movie's going to be something interesting.
Well, and this whole sequence, you know, as you mentioned before, like, in the background, like, ghosted in, you can hear the audio of these murders happening, and you just see the aftermath. And for me, it gives it a lot more impact than if you got to see on-camera murders. It also makes the on-camera murders you do see a lot more impactful, you know, because it's, I don't know if artistic is the right word, because it's so, as you say, gritty, but there's an incredible style to the way the violence is presented.
It is an artful movie, which is really weird when you're talking about, you know, death and murder. And I think that may be part of the reason that it has such a high IMDb score, is because it's not, I mean, it is gritty, it is gross, it is nasty, but it's done in such a way that, like you said, it's not in your face. It's not hostile gritty. It's not a Serbian film gritty. It's not Human Centipede 2 gritty. It
doesn't
more
feel cinematic, you know? It feels authentic, you know? It doesn't feel like a movie. That's the way I would compare it to the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, is after you spend a little time in this world with these characters, it stops feeling like a movie. I know it's a movie, that it's not real, but
it almost feels documentary style.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and I think because of that realism, because of it, Michael Rooker and Tom Tolles playing Henry and Otis, I've actually heard somebody say Otis, but
the real life character, the real life person he's based on was named Otis, but the character in the movie is named Otis.
Okay, so it is Otis Tool then?
Yeah, like the real life guy who was executed right here in Florida. Thank you.
You guys are good at that.
Yeah, the real life guy's name was Otis.
Well, I knew they were partners, and I know Henry was a bit of a braggart. He was also a bit of a storyteller, much as yourself. He has bumped his numbers up to near 300 kills. Now, they obviously do not think that it was quite that high, and going all the way back to the whole Michigan thing, he did live in Detroit for a brief while.
He met Otis here in Florida.
Okay, so, yeah, well, a little bit of a connection then. So, not a good one, but a connection nonetheless. So, back to the movie now. Okay, there's a dead body, and she appears to be floating in a stream or a river or something. And then we go back to another one. More bodies intercut with Henry as he's going about just his daily life. He's buying cigarettes. Kind of have to assume that the bodies that they're showing were killed by Henry. At least that's what we're led to believe, because officially, technically, we don't know yet that Henry is a murderer. Henry stalking a couple new victims, a couple women. I thought it was funny because this is where he's in the mall parking lot, and he parks, two spots away from some woman, very blatantly staring at her. She puts on her sunglasses, she starts her car, and then she just backs out. Now, because she has her sunglasses on, I think she looks at him and doesn't do anything, but then as soon as she backs out, he immediately starts his car and follows her. Maybe times were different in the 80s.
Times were certainly different.
So, maybe
it's a snapshot of a different era, right? Honestly.
And having somebody follow you, now this takes place in Chicago, having somebody follow you immediately after leaving your shopping excursion, you'd think you'd be a little bit more weary of what's going on out in, you know, in your surroundings.
You'd think, but that is actually, I'm not going to jump ahead with specifics, but this is a recurring pattern in the movie of the banality of it all. It seems to be very easy. Yeah, you know, he just follows her and doesn't notice. He just does all these things that are very weird in our current culture, and no one seems to bat an eye.
Yeah, that's very true, because I know we'll get to it, but the lady with the dog later on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a weird interaction between him and her, and I think that perfectly describes what you're saying. Well, we'll get to it, so I'll leave that one for later. But we get to Becky now, and she is at the airport, and she's waiting for a ride. And I'm sorry, but I thought this was hilarious. Otis picks her up. She's got one giant suitcase and one paper bag with handles or whatever. And I don't know if you caught it, but Otis grabs the paper bag and leaves the humongous suitcase for Becky.
You know, I didn't, but that fits his character so well.
I thought it was so funny. I'm sitting in the movie room and I'm watching this movie and I see that and I'm like, wait a second. So I rewinded a little bit real quick, and I was like, that son of a bitch. He left the suitcase for her, and he took the paper bag himself. So it's just one of those laughable...
Setting a precedent of son of a bitchery for Otis. movie.
He does get kind of, yeah, he gets kind of gross for a while. So now Otis and Becky are driving back to their apartment, and Otis is giving her shit for being a dancer, making fun of her because her ex was a complete fool. Back and forth between the two of them, he's teasing her, and at first it's just lovingly, but then it kind of becomes more mockingly, I guess, like openly mocking her and her decisions, you know, of her boyfriend or her husband or whatever it was, and her choice of career. So Henry, now we cut back to Henry. He's playing the exterminator game, and he uses his charm. Can you call it charm? He gets done.
You can't.
He gets done with the first job.
I thought about it. Charm is not the right word.
Well, here's what happens. He gets done with the first job, and he goes back to his boss to get paid. And he says, well, I don't have any more jobs for you, but here's some money on retainer. So you keep the tank and the chemicals, and if I need you, I'll call you back. You've already got a little money, so we're good. So he goes to this woman's house that he was stalking earlier. He obviously is able to talk his way into her house. You know, Michael Rooker is not an attractive fella, at least by my standards. So he somehow is able to persuade this woman to let him into her house. Ultimately, she ends up getting killed, as they cut to her after he leaves, and she's dead on the couch and wearing a negligee and what looks to be like cigarette burns or something on her body. I couldn't exactly tell what that was.
That's what I took.
So he obviously has some kind of swagger, some kind of charm, the way he uses it. But see, he also has a little bit of power over Becky. Now, I don't know if it's her to him or him to her, but however it ends up working out, there's that little bit of attraction there. And obviously, it's very obvious because she does like him.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's one of the saddest parts of the movie. Is I feel that Becky is so attracted to Henry because even though he's a complete sociopath and a murderer and all that stuff, he's still the kindest person that she's ever met. Like, the men in her life, as we will get into her confessions later, like, the men in her life, like, the fact that Henry doesn't beat the shit out of her and rape her right there is, to her, it's like, wow, what a good guy, yeah. You know?
And that's, again, that's so depressing, and just women like that gravitate towards shitheads.
Yeah.
Is the way it seems. So, as you brought up, that's like the only thing that she knows, and even though he doesn't do it to her, he's still a piece of crap, so
yeah,
she just automatically gravitates to that.
He treats her way better than Otis does, so yeah. He seems nice.
Which is, yeah, unfortunate. So now we go back to Otis, and he is working at a gas station, and he's, and I love the way he does it to this woman. He puts the gas in her car, and then he says, she asked him to check the pressure in one of her tires, and he takes out the pressure gauge, and he just puts it there. He doesn't actually put it on the tire, but he just kind of does like a head bob, 1, 2, 3 count. And he's, oh, yep, everything's good. You're good to go. Take it easy. Have a good. And yeah, that's just, that goes back to the whole suitcase thing. It's just, that's the kind of person that he is. So now, Henry and Becky, Otis, he's getting the hookup, the drug hookup. And I kind of missed it. Was he buying or selling pot?
He was selling to the, to the high school football player.
Okay, so
it's pot. It's not even like drugs. It's just pot. But
I'm not allowed to smoke pot, so to me, pot is a drug. They haven't made it legal on a federal level yet, so I am not allowed to drive or not allowed to use it because I drive a federally mandated truck. That's a whole nother story. So in the meantime, while Otis is getting selling his drugs and working at the gas station, working in quotes, Henry and Becky are having a little heart-to-heart about family and abusive parents and how and why. And now, previous to this, Otis had told Becky that Henry had killed his mom, and I believe he said he stabbed her. In this heart-to-heart talk between Henry and Becky, Henry says first that he shot her and then that he beat her. And I think he even comes back again and he says that he ended up stabbing her. I don't remember which is actually the true story. I believe he hit her with a baseball bat when she was abusing him when he was younger is actually the true story. Now, the story about his father losing his legs is true. He got drunk. I think he kind of froze in the winter because Henry came from a rural mountain town. If I remember correctly, and I'd have to look it up, but I did not, I believe his father lost his legs because he actually got drunk and passed out in the snow, got frostbite or something, and had to have his legs amputated. Maybe. I'd have to look it up, so don't hold me to that. So anyway, yeah, Henry and Becky are having this heart-to-heart. You know, they go back and forth, and you can kind of tell that Henry's a little pissed at Otis for telling Becky that he killed his mom, because for whatever reason, he doesn't want it to get out. It does, obviously, because she knows about it. He doesn't really react, but something kind of changes between him and Otis, even though they were cut from the same cloth.
Right.
And you can kind of see that, I think.
Well, that talk between Becky and Henry does a lot, I think, because, you know, as you were saying with, oh, I shot her, I stabbed her, I beat her with a bat, this is actually very much like the real Henry Lee Lucas, who could never keep any of his stories straight. And, you know, he's confessed to 300 murders.
Right.
He's recanted almost 300 murders as well, because he just, you called him a storyteller, and he really is, and he just can't keep his stories straight. And they go back and forth with this version of who's more pathetic, which is one of the most horrific parts of the movie.
Right.
The abuse he suffered from his parents, the abuse she suffered from her parents, and to add, to buttress that point, I don't know if you noticed or not, but after she finishes, right after she finishes discussing how her father sexually abused her,
mm-hmm.
Henry pauses and says, "So you and your dad didn't get along, huh?"
Right.
That's his response to, yeah, like years of abuse. Is like, "Oh, so you guys didn't get along? What?"
I didn't. Yeah. And he kind of relates to it because he's the same way with his mother and father. So,
yeah.
But because of his emotionless nonsense, that's just, yeah, like you said, that's his reaction. So you didn't get along,
right,
with him, okay? Which makes total sense because he's,
right,
obviously a sociopath or a psychopath or whatever the term is now.
Little from column A, a little from column B.
Right, yeah. I'd say a lot from each column. At this point, Becky gets a job working at a salon as a shampoo girl. And she comes back, she tells Otis and Henry she's been, you know, that she got a job. And this part was really weird, okay? And I mean, I know they did it for setup, but she shows Henry and Otis a I Love Chicago t-shirt. I don't recall which I can't even call him gentleman. I don't recall which guy, Otis or Henry, told her to try it on. And she tells them to just turn their heads rather than leaving the room. Otis, as she's trying on the shirt, you know, she's getting down to obviously just her bra. And Otis kind of sneaks a peek. And this is the first time that you notice that, you know, Otis is a creep towards his sister. He's trying to take a picture, or not take a picture, take a sneak a peek of her and her bra. And this is, like I said, this is where you kind of, this is the first time you realize that Otis is, like, you know, really a creep. So Otis is giving her more guff about her job, about her old job, and the fact that, you know, she's only qualified to be a shampoo girl and she could go back to stripping or dancing or whatever. He kind of pulls her in for a kiss, and Henry immediately stops it. Grabs Otis by the back of his head, grabs his hair, and just says, you know, you fucking knock it off now or I'm gonna end you, kind of thing. So this is really the only, like, humanity you get from Henry basically throughout the entire movie. Henry and Otis go out now. I guess they're feeling sexually frustrated, so they go out to initially have a beer, and then they end up finding some ladies for some sexy time. For whatever reason, they decide to both have sexy time in the car at the same time. Henry ends up killing his date or his lady friend or whatever. Of course, Henry or Otis's girlfriend or girl, kind of, she looks back at her friend who is obviously dead now, and she starts freaking out. So immediately, Henry kills Otis's girl. Otis obviously freaks out. If I remember the true history again, Otis has already killed people, and in his own goings around, I believe he had already killed someone before he met Henry. Now, I don't know why they make him freak out so much in the movie.
Well, in the movie, he hasn't. Henry asks him directly, and he hasn't. He says that he's killed. He implies that he's killed somebody in self-defense.
Correct.
But he's never done this, this sexually motivated, hateful murder.
And Henry spins it to, she was going to tell, so technically this is in self-defense. So Henry's trying to justify it to Otis.
Well, sure, and then he expands it to all of society, where they're all trying to get you. It's us or them, so you have to kill them, you know? It's
right.
Pretty good pathology there.
And obviously he makes it work because they go on a bit of a killing spree. I love the some of the scenes coming up. Otis is watching TV and he's watching nothing but static. He gets obviously pissed off, or not obviously, he gets pissed off and he kicks the screen. And then he feels so sorry for himself when he does it, and then he's almost like a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old that breaks their toy and, you know, feels like, well, what am I going to do? The world is coming to an end kind of thing. So they go to see a black market television salesman. The first time I saw this movie, I don't know why, but this scene with them and the guy in the utility closet or whatever that was, the storage locker, this scene freaked me out for some reason. I don't know why exactly, but they're talking to a large gentleman, a large smart-ass fellow, as I have written down, to get a new TV. They have him go through, he asks them how much they got, and they say $50. And he says, well, for $50, I can show you the black and white, or I got the black and white TV. And then Henry says, well, what else do you got? And he says, well, I got this for $75, I got the color TV for $150, I got the Zenith, I got the Sony, I got the Panasonic, I got the blah, 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 blah. And then Otis says, you know what, we'll just take the black and white. And so the guy goes off on him, and he says, you know what, you motherfuckers, hey, come in here, you got $50, you're asking me all these questions, you're wasting my time. And of course, Henry snaps, he gets pissed.
So what can I do for you, gentlemen?
Oh, it's hot in here, isn't it?
I've got a cold.
We want TV.
How much you got to spend?
What do you got?
$50.
Can let you have the set over there for $50.
Well, turn it on, we want to see if it works.
What's the matter, don't you trust me?
Uh-uh.
Here. Plug it in down there.
Here?
Yeah, down there. Real good. I see you've had some college. Yeah, like you can see, it works real good. Just takes a while to warm up.
It's black and white.
Of course it's black and white. What do you expect for $50? Fucking 3D, for Christ's sake?
Well, how much is color? We want color.
You can't get color for $50.
That's okay. Let's see what you got.
What have I got? You want cable ready? You want remote control? You want UHF? You want 13-inch? You want 19-inch? I bet you'd like to have a 19-inch.
Yeah, yeah.
You want Sony? You want Zenith? You want a Gold Star?
Oh, what can we get for 150?
Could let you have this set for 150. It's worth 300. But here, take a look at this. For an extra 75, you can take this $600 set.
What's this?
It's a camcorder.
What?
It's a videotape recorder and camera rolled into one. You just pop in a cassette and you're ready to go.
You can make your own movies with that?
What else would you do with it?
How much you want for it?
It's worth $1,000. I'd take half.
$500?
Yeah. Half of $1,000 is $500.
That's a little more than we were planning to spend. I think we should just take the TV.
Okay. Which one do you want?
The $50 one.
The $50 one. You guys come in here, I show you this, I show you that. You creeps got a lousy $50 to spend. You should have stopped me a long time ago. Take the $50 set and get the hell out. I'm a busy man.
Well, we were really counting on a color set.
What's the matter? You got shit in your ears? The black and white is $50. Take it or leave it.
Sorry we wasted your time. Come on, Otis.
Don't give me sorry, you dumbass. Did I stutter? Give me the $50 and get out!
So what does he do? He tells Otis to get an extension cord. He strangles the guy. He stabs him with like a heat gun or soldering iron. Yeah, okay. And then they take the black and white TV that they were going to buy, and they smash it over his head, plug it in, and turn it on, and it electrocutes the guy. For whatever reason, that always bothered me, and I don't know why, because it's not like it's a horrendous death. I don't know why. It always bothered me for some reason. Maybe it's the way they treat him, or...
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it also. I think it's just that gritty, super low-budget, realistic style of the movie that when horrific violence jumps off, it feels even more horrific because it's got some sort of element of realism to it. And I, like, last night I'm watching it, like, God damn, what a terrible way to go, you know? Getting, like, shanked by a soldering iron, why Otis is strangling you, and, like, all this other shit. It's only overshadowed by that family that comes up a little later, you know?
That one is definitely worse. I know exactly what you're talking about. So,
yeah.
Ultimately, Henry and Otis end up grabbing a color TV and a video camcorder. That's from the Wayback Machine for all you youngsters that don't know what that is. And they go back to the apartment and they're dancing with Becky, and Otis is actually filming with the camcorder. He's filming Henry and Becky dancing, and this is where Henry gets kind of uncomfortable dancing with Becky. Because she plants a kiss on him. And they do just a very little bit of making out, and then he gets, like, really weirded out for some reason. And they don't really explain it, and maybe this goes back to his mom being abusive and he can't trust women, but there's just a very subtle, like, weirdness to it, to the whole situation, so...
His kryptonite, you know, he recoils from genuine human intimacy.
Right.
Like she genuinely likes him and is trying to show him, and he does not know how to respond to that.
That's a good point.
He totally shuts down. Stop filming me, stop filming me, stop filming me. Right. You know? And I think that is what made him so uncomfortable, was just something as simple as a girl that likes him and tried to show him that. He doesn't know how to deal with it.
Well, that makes fair sense. That's a very good breakdown. Because he just... Well, shit, I can't even expand on it because you covered it, so... You covered it.
That was just my read on it.
Yeah,
you know?
But no, that makes total sense. It's just real human emotion and him don't mix. So,
yeah
very, very good call on that one. Otis now at his parole officer, and he's talking about just, you know... Well, I guess it's not important, but... He ends up stopping back by the high school, and he's selling pot to the high schooler again. This is kind of weird. Otis, you know, he gives the guy his pot, and he takes the money. Actually, I don't even think he gets his money, but Otis puts his hand on the guy's leg. The guy ends up, the high schooler, punches Otis in the mouth, and hurry up and hops out of the car and runs off with Otis's pot. Otis is bitching to Henry that he's so angry that he could kill and whatever. So Henry says, you know what? He goes, if that's true, he's like, say it again. So Otis says, well, yeah, I'm so mad I could kill. So that's what they do. They go for a drive. They go to an underpass so they pull over, they pop the hood of their truck or their car, and they wait for a passerby to stop. And as soon as he gets out to help, he says, hey, you know, what seems to be the problem? Bang, bang, bang. And they just kill the guy in cold blood. No reason given other than I want to kill somebody because, you know, the kid punched me in the mouth. Henry now telling Otis that he always needs to be on the move. And he always needs to change his methods of murder. You can shoot a guy one time, and you can stab somebody the next time. And if you're gonna shoot him, you gotta use a different gun each time, because they will realize, if you're using the same gun with the same kind of bullets and the same this, that they're gonna realize who you are, and it's like a fingerprint to murder. as they're discussing, they're videotaping a couple of homeless people attacking another homeless guy for whatever meager savings he has. This is the scene that you referenced earlier. They pull up to a house, and you don't actually see them go inside, but it's kind of weird the way they do this, and it's a very cool camera trick, but they pull up to the house, and you don't see them go inside, but the scene cuts to a replay of an assault on the TV, and this is the scene that you were talking about at the family's house. Otis is attacking a woman, and he's just kind of having his way with her. You see the dad tied up, and Henry kicks the father. Otis is messing with the lady. He's playing with her. He's just pure assault. The son comes in. Henry drops the camera on the floor and ends up ultimately killing the son. Snaps his neck. Otis immediately kills the woman. Henry stabs the father. This was probably... Even though the TV guy made me uncomfortable, this scene was probably the worst one out of the movie.
And there is zero blood, but it feels so real. It's so genuinely upsetting. It feels a lot more graphic than it is.
It's visceral. But like you said, there's no blood. There's very little blood from when Henry is stabbing the father, but it's so, like, you know, it's quick. I think because it's so real and so, this is one of those situations, like, this could happen at any time, and it's just, it's very...
And this is what it would look like if it did happen. It would probably look just like this. Not fancy or glamorous or well-staged, no cuts, no editing, just raw, like, it's just what, like, maybe the whole thing is maybe 2 minutes.
It's not very long at all, but it's just like so in your face and it packs a punch.
Yeah. And then the fact that they're sitting there on their couch like Beavis and Butthead just watching it and rewinding it and watching it again, you know? It's
No, I know. You know, for as this movie can be, there are a couple scenes like the suitcase. Well, this next scene coming up. Otis and Henry are driving in the car, and Otis is leaning out the window, and he's videotaping women on the street. And he's making, you know, just shitty sexist comments about, look at her ass, and she's got legs up to nowhere, and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if Henry does it on purpose or if it's on accident, but he drives the video camera into another car, and it smashes in Otis's hands, and Otis is all, you know, obviously bent out of shape, and the lens is hanging off, and he's pissed off at Henry because, hey, you know, you dumbass, you drove into the car. I don't know if he does it on purpose, but almost like, did they do that on purpose, or is this just one of those things, you know, is made to be comic relief?
Because Otis is definitely hilarious in that scene.
And because he's so offended that Henry would drive him into a car and smash his toy. You know, it goes back to him being like a 2 or 3 year old with his toys.
Yeah.
At this point, we go back to Becky, and she's telling Henry. At some point, Becky got a phone call, and I believe it was from her daughter. Becky, she's now telling Henry that she wants to leave. They kind of leave the room, and they go to make some sexy time together. And Otis interrupts, of course, and then Henry gets all weird. So he goes to leave for some cigarettes. Maybe you know the reference to this. I don't. I'm sorry. But he asks Otis, he says, "You got any cigarettes?" Or, I'm sorry, one of the two asks, "You got any cigarettes?" And he says, "Not since Superman died." I don't know if that's supposed to be a reference to something or if that's weird-ass...
It didn't land for me. I don't know what they were talking about.
All right. So, I have no idea. But so he goes down to the local party store. Okay, this is not movie-related. What do you call them? Convenience stores, party stores, what?
Convenience store.
Okay, see, up here in Michigan, it's a party store. I don't know why, but it's just one of those regional things. So I figured I'd ask. Because I'd always heard
Party
one of the only people.
Sounds cooler.
Yeah, I'd always heard that Michigan is one of the a few places that actually calls it a party store. So
that's I'm gonna file that away because I never heard that before.
It's okay. Is it pop or soda?
Soda.
Soda. See, it's pop for us. So
yeah.
So anyway, he goes to a party store, convenience store, whatever. He goes in for a pack of smokes. Actually, he buys two packs of smokes. $2.60 for two packs of smokes. Unheard of, because now I think a single pack is like $7.50. Yeah, we haven't bought smokes in quite a while, but last time we did, it was about that much. So, I think the guy that owned the convenience store, the cashier, was the director or had some part of the movie behind the scene. But so he buys the two packs of smokes and the guy says, you know, hey, how about them Bears? And of course, Henry just shoots back, fuck the Bears. He leaves the store. He comes into an awkward conversation with the dog lady. He goes back. I will always remember this part. He comes back and Otis is raping Becky.
And strangling her as well.
Correct. Henry and Otis fight. Becky grabs a rat tail comb and stabs Otis in the eye. And even though you can tell it's obviously a fake head, that is one of those scenes that, and maybe this is one of those Mandela effect, but I always remember the first time I saw it, even though I just rewatched it, something purple coming out of Otis's eye after he was stabbed. Now, it could just be in my head, but I don't know. So anyway.
That shot, that cut, that act of violence is so fucking short. You can't make out that much detail. They keep it super short.
Right.
And your brain fills it in because it's so memorable. And it's probably, a half a second? I mean,
It happens, awfully damn quick. But like you said, it's so memorable, and it's like...
Yeah, Mandela effect. You fill it in.
Your
brain fills in the blanks.
So weird. Because and again, even though it's so short, it's like bam in the face, you know?
Yeah.
No pun intended. But but it's like, it punches you. It hits you. And I love that about this movie, is that... Like, not everything is so graphic and overly done, but it holds such a heavy weight to it.
Absolutely.
And I that's just one of the best things about this movie. So Henry immediately starts dismembering Otis in the tub, and even though you don't see it, I do like the squishy cutting sounds that you hear when he's sawing off Otis's head. Just that squishy, like, blood gushing kind of thing. They dump the body after he's done. Dump it in a river, I believe it was. And then Becky and Henry hit the road. They stop at a motel for the night. And the next day, Henry dumps another big suitcase on the side of the road. Now, they don't actually show you Becky getting into the car in the morning, so we have to assume that it was Becky that was in the suitcase when he stopped. They don't actually say it, but you got to assume.
Yeah.
And then
that music cue at the end, that like hard synthesizer note they hold on to while they're zooming in on the suitcase.
Yeah.
It's actually more unsettling than if we had seen her die, I think.
Probably. And again, this all goes back to what your mind puts in there, or what your mind thinks
absolutely.
Is happening. Henry drives off, and that's the credits. So, an old movie that struggled for so long with trying to get released. It's gripping, it's powerful, it's gritty, it's nihilistic, it's hard-hitting, it punches you in the gut, it makes you want to just, like, cover your eyes and go, what the fuck did I just watch? But it's not really in your face. It's all, like, kind of roundabout, but it's all right there.
For people that are into gore movies, they wouldn't be happy with the level of gore in this, because there's virtually none. There's a lot of violence, and it's really super impactful and unsettling. But just, I mean, compared to some of the other movies that you've reviewed on this show, this is, like... Gore-wise, this isn't a drop in the bucket.
Gore-wise, this is very tame, but it is a very violent movie.
Yeah, and it's much more affecting than movies that have a lot more graphic violence in it, I think.
I agree 100%. So we started with the gore score in our last episode with Richard. 1 out of 10, what would you put this on the gore score?
Well, we were just sort of discussing that as to, like, graphic violence as opposed to being, like, really powerful.
Right.
In terms of that, it's one of the most effective movies that you can watch. But in terms of actual on-screen gore, I'd go like a 4, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's actually right where I'd put it. There is a lot of violence on screen, but in terms of gore, there is not actually that much.
No.
I mean, obviously, you got the eye stabbing, but like we discussed, it's so quick. And it packs a punch, but it's very quick. You see it for a second, a heartbeat, and then it's away. Even him cutting up Otis after he's dead. You see it for a second, you hear it, but you do see him actually put his head in a plastic bag. But even that is like almost comical, just the way he does it. So, yeah, I'd give it a 4 as well on the gore score. Now, what's your overall score, taking into consideration everything, acting, movie, you know, down to the nitty-gritty?
Honestly, I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10, and not to say that it is a perfect movie, but there are so many amazing elements, and historically speaking, I think it was really far ahead of its time. Like, okay, it's a 4 out of 10 now because we live in an American guinea pig world. But 30 years ago, the gore score would have been through the roof.
Right.
Not to mention the acting talent involved. Michael Rooker is still on top of the acting game. You know, this was like his debut.
Right.
And, you know, he's still doing he's doing Marvel movies. You know, he's so...
Yeah, he's been around quite a while. He's definitely been around quite a while.
It is, I think, one of those movies that all real horror fans needs to watch at some point. It's not an easy watch, especially if you're not into this kind of movie.
Right.
But it's so good.
And it...
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. That's a fair assessment. I'm going to go just slightly under you, and I'm going to go with a 9. Because I'd seen it a few times... It loses its impactfulness, I think.
Right.
That original, and I mean, this is just for me now. This is just for me now. But that original watch, way back in 95 or 96 or whenever it was, it's so memorable, and I hate to keep saying it, but it punches you. It hits you in the stomach. You feel with the family in the house. And the kid comes in, and he's immediately snuffed out. The guy in the TV room, just... I'm going to go with a 9. And that's a heavy 9, a strong 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is actually our movie for today. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. I'm glad you all stuck around. Nate, I am extremely happy to finally talk to you in person over the phone.
Right.
We've been going back and forth for quite some time now. And like I said earlier, I only found your podcast by happenstance. I'm extremely glad I did because I love, you know, I don't listen to your episodes as they come out. I like to save a bunch for a good chunk of it and listen to like 6 to 8 of them.
I think
because the characters... Because you can have a character in episode 1 and then not see the same character until episode 6, I think it makes it more like, again, it's more of a punch. I gotta tell you, I still love the character of Gordo the Clown. I hope at some point you can bring him back in some way, somehow.
Well, I tell so many stories out of order, I can always circle back and tell more stories about him, yeah.
All right, well, good. That sounds like a plan to me. So, Nate, give yourself another shout-out here before we sign off, and go for it, my friend.
My podcast is called A Scary Home Companion, Original Horror Stories. The episodes are 30 to 45 minutes each, and every one of them stands on their own, but when you add them all up together, they turn into something more. On all podcasting platforms, including Pandora, which up until a few weeks ago I didn't even realize had podcasts.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'll have to check on that for ours then, because I had no idea either.
Right?
Yeah. So I didn't know we were on iHeartRadio either until a couple weeks ago. So good to know. So you're all the way down in Florida. You're wearing a freaking tank top right now, and I'm...
Yeah, it's 85 out.
Oh, man, you suck. All right. So, Nate, my friend, I am, again, so happy I could have you on.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. We will do something. I'm not sure what at this point, but we'll figure something out. And
totally.
I thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking Nancy's place temporarily only. But I, again, thank you for coming on Extreme Horror Replay. And
thanks for having me on your show. I love it.
I'm going to do my sign off real quick. So for those of you who don't know, you can find us on everything from Stitcher, Google Play, or Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Spotify, etc., 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 on down the line. You can find me on Twitter at Horror Replay, on Instagram at XHR_replay, or you can find me on Gmail at ExtremeHorrorReplay@gmail.com. So for Nate, I want to say thank you one more time. I am Ben.
Thanks, Ben. This is Nate.
My friends, we will see you. Be good to each other. All right, buddy. Signing off.
All right.